thing with diversity and inclusion, especially if you want to get into a space where it's belonging and people feel safe enough to be themselves, you have to have a lot of intentionality. And you also have to have what I call moral courage. And that's the ability to stick through something, even though it's going to be difficult. A lot of companies would say, you know, we want to make sure our company looks like our customer base, or we want to make sure we have different people from different backgrounds. But once they implement a change and it's met with resistance, a lot of companies will instantly fold because they would just take offense to that, or they would not want to try and offend people more because they felt like, you know, maybe I did something and now look, it didn't yield results. And the idea of making something sustainable is understanding that when you have different people from different backgrounds come together, conflict is inevitable. But what happens is when you are in a world where you are not trying to push past conflict to understand why that person reacts to certain things or certain policies, you're actually not trying to understand the person. And if you don't try to understand the person, you're not going to be able to understand the policy and understand how to institute that.
I'm your host, Michelle King, and you're listening to The Fix, a podcast that shares the stories of women and men who are innovating and taking action to advance equality in the workplace and beyond. I'm a third culture kid. I was born in South Africa, but I grew up in New Zealand. And since then, I've lived in Malaysia, the United Kingdom, Australia, and the United States. Third culture kids is a term used to describe people who are raised in a culture other than their parents or the culture of the country named on their passport for a significant part of their childhood. Third culture kids are often exposed to a greater variety of cultural influences. While not really identifying with one culture can make it difficult to feel like you belong anywhere, there are benefits to being a third culture kid. For example, research finds that third culture kids are generally more tolerant of different cultures and of people from different walks of life compared to individuals who don't share this culturally diverse background. Third culture kids also find it easier to adapt to new cultures and understand how to behave appropriately in these environments. Teo Roxon, a diversity and inclusion expert, is harnessing the insights, knowledge, and cultural awareness that he's gained from being a third culture kid to enable people to communicate more effectively across cultural divides. On this final episode for 2019, Teo will share how you can use your difference to make a difference. As a son of a diplomat, Teo Roxon always found himself immersed in different cultures, having to find different ways to fit in. This created an identity crisis for Teo early on, as he didn't identify with one particular culture. Eventually, though, this cultural fluidity gave Teo the ability to better understand people who came from different backgrounds and the motivations behind their actions. Over the years, this cultural understanding led Teo to write a book entitled Use Your Difference to Make a Difference, in which he shares how our unique identities are in fact assets and not challenges to be overcome. He also provides tools to support individuals and organizations with bridging cultural divides and communicating more effectively. Here, Teo shares more on how his journey started.
I'm someone that's described as a TCK, or a third culture kid. And essentially what that means is you spent the formative periods of your life outside of your parents' culture. So this is very typical with missionary kids, you know, diplomatic kids, or army brats. You know, you move around so much. And my dad was a diplomat. So we moved around to 5 countries and 4 continents by the time I was 18. So I was always the minority everywhere I went. You know, it didn't even matter if I was in Nigeria, I was the hidden immigrant, because by the time I came back to Nigeria from my travels, I was all of a sudden not Nigerian enough. And then when I was in other places, people would make assumptions about who I was based on how I sounded. You know, like, you don't sound this, you don't sound that, you sound like this. So that was kind of my experience growing up. I had this bit of an identity crisis. But then you compound that with the fact that the first 9 years of my life was also spent under a bit of interesting circumstances. I grew up under two military dictatorships. And at the time growing up, before I hit nine, Nigeria was used to be sanctioned for several inhumane things sometimes. And I was under the regime of General Sani Abacha and General Ibrahim Babangida. So all those things combined while watching as Nelson Mandela was leading South Africa out of apartheid, they had a profound effect on me. You know, they had an effect on me in such a way where I really didn't want to participate in places or spaces that kept making people feel like they couldn't fully be themselves or demeaning people for what their tribes or what they believed. And so I started writing. The book is called Use Your Difference to Make a Difference. And the subtitle is How to Connect and Communicate in a Cross-Cultural World. I wrote the book in response to the times I feel like we're in. I feel like we're in a very reactive time that's defined by fear and ignorance. You know, a lot of people today feel like if they hold different beliefs, they can't get to know each other. And so what I wanted to create was a path for moral courage, empathy, compassion, as well as accountability. And in the book, I broke it down into what I believe are the three foundational steps to truly connect in a cross-cultural format. And I say it's educate, don't perpetuate, instead communicate. And in the book, I go through those things. The education piece is about self-education, so self-awareness, understanding who you are so you know what your biases are, what your values are, as well as what your triggers are. And then I dive into finding your inner Sherlock so you can become a better detective of your environment. That's the education piece. And then the don't perpetuate piece is about making sure you don't perpetuate systems of inequity and inequality, either through fake news or through abusing your power and privilege. And then the communicate piece is about opening dialogue in different ways.
It is all too common to have a subconscious sense of cultural superiority, whereby we assume that the rest of the world should think, act, and function in the same way that we do. To communicate across cultural divides, we need to develop a tolerance and appreciation for difference. Here, Teo shares how to do this.
What I'm hoping people do is people change their relationship with anything that they perceive as difference. Throughout history, the reason why we've gotten to where we are, or we've had any conflicts, is because people have had an adverse relationship with anything that's different. Different religion, I'm going to do a crusade. I'm going to make sure I civilize you. I'm going to colonize you. I'm going to be sexist towards you. I'm going to create these laws. Anytime we've had anything that's different from us, we sometimes haven't known how to react to that. And as a result, the impulse is to be aggressive towards that. And so my hope is that as people are reading the book, they're understanding how to, one, not be threatened by something that's different from them, and to seek to understand how something that's different can also present an equally as good alternative. And it doesn't have to be something that's that. I'm also hoping that people change their relationship with difference in the sense that they don't just default to the stereotype of what they've heard about that difference, as opposed to investigate how they can humanize that difference. And so I'm hoping people change their relationship with people that are different and situations that are different. And then I'm hoping people learn how to humanize each other. You know, don't go to the shortcut and default to a narrative that hasn't been thoroughly investigated.
For too long, companies have focused on demographic representation by counting how many women or LGBTQ or veterans or Black or Hispanic employees they have. Demographically diverse representation is believed to be a sign that workplaces are more equal. But this isn't equality. Your workplace can be demographically diverse, but not inclusive. And it can be inclusive, but not demographically diverse. Simply having a workforce with different demographic characteristics does not guarantee that everyone will be included and valued in the same way. Teo argues that diversity and inclusion efforts need to shift from off-the-shelf training programs and recruitment targets to creating an environment where people feel like they belong.
I think sometimes some people have this check the box mentality. And the thing with diversity and inclusion, especially if you want to get into a space where it's belonging and people feel safe enough to be themselves, you have to have a lot of intentionality. And you also have to have what I call moral courage. And that's the ability to stick through something, even though it's going to be difficult. A lot of companies would say, you know, we want to make sure our company looks like our customer base. So we want to make sure we have different people from different backgrounds. But once they implement a change and it's met with resistance, a lot of companies will instantly fold because they would just take offense to that, or they would not want to try and offend people more because they felt like, you know, maybe I did something and now look, it didn't yield results. And the idea of making something sustainable is understanding that when you have different people from different backgrounds come together, conflict is inevitable. But what happens is when you are in a world where you are not trying to push past conflict to understand why that person reacts to certain things or certain policies, you're actually not trying to understand the person. And if you don't try to understand the person, you're not going to be able to understand the policy and understand how to institute that. So the advice I always give companies is to, first of all, be transparent. Let everybody know, hey, this is what we're trying to do and this is where we're trying to go. So everybody has an idea of where they are and where they're trying to go. And also be willing to also involve as many people as you can in the process. It's not a matter of, hey, I'm going to make a decision about diversity inclusion and then I'm just not going to tell you what I'm doing. That's going to incite resentment. It's also not a case of I'm just going to try a policy and I'm going to do it once a month or every Black History Month or every Hispanic Heritage Month. That's very reactive. It's not proactive and people feel like they're tokenized. And so you really have to understand the people you serve and understand that diversity and inclusion looks very different for different companies. And the last point I'll say here is that diversity and inclusion is really about connecting the invisible to the visible. People often just think it's just about gender or race, but it's a lot of things. There's an intersectional approach that needs to be taken here. It could be mental health. It could be your sales team versus your marketing team. It could be your French team versus your American team. You know, it could be between the African team versus the African American team. It could be, you know, white, Black, Asian, all these, East Asian versus South Asian. There are subtle nuances that need to be taken into account when you're trying to create an inclusive environment. And if one can't understand that, and if one doesn't understand that, and if people are too quick to group people into boxes, you then run into troubles. And then that's actually where you actually end up doing way more damage than you actually intended.
The key to creating work environments where everybody feels like they belong is accountability. Teo believes that every single one of us has a role to play in creating inclusive, supportive, and collaborative work environments. But it starts with being accountable for your own actions.
A lot of people have bystanders. You know, sometimes people are too concerned with being good people or, you know, well-meaning people instead of being concerned about the well-being of people. I go into a lot of companies when they bring me in and I can't tell you how many times they've said, you know, I saw this, I just didn't know if it was my place to say anything. And that statement, by the way, holds a lot of privilege and power because if you have that ability to conveniently step out and say, well, you know, I saw it, I just couldn't do it. That's not the same experience for someone who is experiencing that and has to deal with that every day. And the reason why I say that's the number one thing is there are many people that don't understand the dynamics of inside groups and outside groups, or in groups and out groups, where the people in groups feel validated and don't feel like, they feel like they're in a meritocracy, essentially. They work hard, they get paid, it's fine. And people in out groups feel like they have to, you know, hide parts of themselves in order to succeed. And so as they're suppressing parts of themselves, they're dealing with internal turmoil. And at one point when they don't want to express themselves, because if they do, they either perpetuate a certain stereotype about them or potentially hamper their positions. And so the thing that I've always said is a lot of people aren't active allies and they're bystanders and they're not using their power dynamics to say, hey, this is an unwritten culture we have here. Let's make sure that we have safe spaces for women to express themselves. We have people in the LGBTQ community feeling safe enough to put their pictures, their family pictures. We are not just making holidays in a Judeo-Christian way. We're expanding, you know, paternity leave as much as we do maternity leave. And we're also not cutting down the pay for both. You know, these are all these subtle things where people have seen things that they could do better, but they think it's not as much of a big deal as it is. And then it ends up being culture. We always say, be comfortable being uncomfortable. I think the way you and I grew up, we didn't have a choice. You're just in a different environment. And so if you didn't put yourself out there, you wouldn't, you know, you wouldn't make friends or you wouldn't find a way to just to fit in. But I think the bigger picture has to be drawn in such a way where the leader of the company has to take command. He, she, they, whoever the leader is, has to inculcate that into the culture and say, look, this is what we're going to do. We're going to implement this into your performance-based reviews. right? These are our diversity and inclusion goals, and this is how they tie into our company goals. And based on our reviews, we are incorporating these D&I goals, the diversity and inclusion, for those that don't know what D&I is. And you're going to be measured based on that. And you have to basically have things that you can track and keep accountability.
Finally, Teo shares small actions that each of us can take every day to appreciate and value difference.
Before you can ever connect across cultures, you really have to know who you are and know where you are. Understanding your biases is so key. A lot of people think that if they're biased, that means that they're racist, sexist, misogynist. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying examine who your three best friends are, examine the last three places you've lived, and who the last three people you've been in relationships with are. Make sure that you're being super specific. What did you bond over? Where were those places you lived in? And what did you connect or fight over? The reason I'm saying this is that we live in a very conditioned world where a lot of people are not as intentional. Maybe a lot of the reasons you believe what you believe is because maybe you were taught in school, your parents told you, or you somehow just accepted it without actually investigating it. And so when you go through the exercise, ask yourself if you actually know why you believe what you believe and understand why you have discomfort around certain groups. Once you have figured out where the discomfort is and what your points are, you're going to start noticing that you're going to have triggers. You're going to find out you have certain triggers. Maybe when people say something, it reminds you of a childhood moment. I was a minority everywhere I went because of being a diplomatic kid, but you have to find spaces where, you know, people look differently from you or think differently from you and put yourself in there on a weekly basis. That's one of those things. Another tip I'll give is in terms of opening dialogue. There are a few ways. If you ever practice improv, which is something comedians and actors do, with improv, the basic protocol is no matter what scenario or situation is presented to you, your job is to accept that and build on it. You can't belittle it. You can't negate it. You can't, you know, push it aside. So that next time you're in a conversation with someone, maybe you don't even agree, just the way that you can do it is essentially rephrase what they're saying and say, okay, I see what you're saying here. Are you saying that such and such is this? Okay, what if I said this about that? And then you keep saying, what if I said this about that? And then they say, well, that's how I would react to it. I would say this if you said that. And then if I said that. So once you start saying something like that, where you're opening a dialogue, your energy ends up being conversational as opposed to aggressive. And making sure that you understand that your job is not to say, I disagree with you. You're just going to try and understand it, basically rephrase what they said to them, back to them, acknowledge and affirm them, and then add your opinion and your thought to that. And that practice of saying, okay, I'm just not going to disagree with you instantly. I'm just going to tell you my point after rephrasing your point. It's a good way to ensure that you have conversations with people that disagree with you. You might not end up agreeing, but each of you will feel respected because both of you will feel that you understood each other.
After another incredible year of hosting this podcast, it's really meaningful to end 2019 with this important message from Teo about how each of us can value difference. For those of you based in the United States, 2020 is election year, and that makes it even more important to develop a tolerance for different perspectives. According to Teo, this starts with learning about your own identity, perspective, and values, and then unlearning the biases, stereotypes, and prejudices that you hold. This is how we can learn new ways of interacting with one another. This can include something as simple as asking questions to understand different perspectives, immersing yourself in different cultures, and educating yourself about cultural differences. All of these actions we can take to make valuing difference a daily practice. That's our final episode for 2019. We'll take a 2-week break and be back on January 6th with an exciting new episode for 2020. Thank you all so much for your support this year. If you're interested in partnering with us or being a guest on the show, then please reach out through our website, thefixpodcast.org. You can also sign up to our weekly newsletter and contribute your story there. I hope you all have a wonderful break, and I'll catch you all again in the new year.